And we're holding on page Tes Vav in Yerushalmi Rosh Hashanah, Ois Zayin. Still in the middle of talking about the judgment of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah had said, Rosh Hashanah koboi oilam oivrin lefonav kivnei morin. On Rosh Hashanah, everybody passes by in front of Hashem like bnei morin. We have that's where the line in Unasana Tokuf comes from. So what does kivnei morin mean? And the Bavli over here also has several different explanations. Rab Acha Amar Kohodin Divin. So Rab Acha says, like the way that animals come out of a pen, when you're counting in particular, when you're counting the newborn sheep or goats or cattle to take Maisa Behema for the year, so you have to put them in a pen, and you have a narrow entrance, a narrow exit, whatever, where they can only go out one at a time, because otherwise you're going to get mixed up in the count. So the point is, in other words, the animals go single file, the same way everybody goes single file in front of Hashem, and Hashem looks at every person individually. So then according to that, Kivnei Morin, one meaning of it would be that that Morin is Moshin Imra, which is the Aramaic word for sheep. The Rabbanan Amikado Bangnimin, however you pronounce it. The Rabbanan say, like a Bangnimin. So what is that? There are actually several explanations. Eitz Yosef, and some of the Mefoshim on the Yerushalmi itself say also that it means like a narrow entrance. Same idea, everybody's going single file. Hey, Moshe on Yerushalmi gives a different explanation. He says that a bam gnimin is it's like something like a telescope that astronomers use to look at the sky. So in other words, in principle, an astrologer uses that and he knows everybody's future based on that. So in other words, the idea would be that Hashem is looking at everybody, so to speak, with the tool that an astrologer uses to know what their future is going to be. In other words, everybody's passing in front of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and he knows exactly what's going to be with them during the coming year. Yet another possibility, the Oruch HaSholem brings up an idea that maybe the word means a type of dye, and in that case, it's al derech, also like you have by Maisa Behema, where the animals go through single file, and then every tenth one is marked with red paint, so it would be a similar idea, in other words, that everybody is being painted with the same brush by Hashem, even though everybody is being looked at individually, but on the other hand, Hashem is also looking at everybody collectively at the same time. In fact, the in the Gemara it brings a brice on this. V'cholam niskorin v'skira achas. Everybody is gazed at with one gaze. In other words, even though Hashem is looking at everybody individually, he's also at the same time looking at everybody collectively, which of course a boss of Adam wouldn't be able to do. But the word skira is also related to the word sikra, as in the paint that they put on the animal for Maisa Behema. So therefore, it may be kind of a play on words, kadob bangaminin, where in other words that Hashem is looking at everybody individually, but Hashem is also, so to speak, painting them with one brush. With skira achas, with one brush stroke. Anyway, my timer. Where do we see such a thing in a pasuk? As the pasuk says, "Hayotze yachad libam." Hashem creates all their hearts together. Hamevin al kol maaseim, and Hashem understands everything that they're doing. So, in other words, Hashem is able to look at everybody individually and collectively at the same time. But now the question then is, Eitz Yosef explains, now the implicit question is that Hayotze Yachad Libam suggests that Hashem is looking at everybody, collectively, Yachad, and then Hamevin al Kol Maaseim would be individually, where he was saying the other way around, that first everybody goes individually and then Hashem is next looking at them collectively. So why is it in the opposite order in the pasuk? Omer Rav Levi, it means Hayotze Yachad Libam Kvar Haven al Kol Maaseim. It means when Hashem is creating and looking at their hearts altogether, Hashem has already considered their maisim on an individual level. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Elazar, B'noyeg Sheba Olam, you consider the way it usually works in the world. Consider, for example, the word Yotzer also means a potter. So consider, Man Noyeg La Yotzer Hazeh, what is easier for a potter? Lasas Meyachan Kanim, to make 100 barrels, or Lisako Bahem, or to look at them. Obviously, Loyles is Tako Bahem, isn't it easier to look at them? So in other words, the point is, for a potter, it's harder to make them and much easier to look at them, whereas for Hashem, it's all the same thing. To look at everybody and to create everybody is exactly the same kind of effort for Hashem, which is to say no effort at all. So in the same way, in other words, Hashem created everybody, and Hashem examines everybody, particularly on Yom Kippur, in order to do good for them. So that's the purpose for which Hashem made everybody, is to be able to look at them and to be able to be proud of what they've accomplished. Similar to the way, so in other words, the mashal is the way that a potter makes his kelim so that he has beautiful objects to look at. Another meaning of Hayotze Yachad Libon, besides that it means that Hashem puts their hearts all together and looks at everybody collectively, it also means Yotze, the creator of everyone. Yachad means it as one, Yotze. He wants Shehe Libon Yachad Elov, Yachad Libon. He wants that all their hearts should be united towards him. So the yachad doesn't just mean that Hashem looks at everybody collectively. It means Hashem's purpose. Hashem wants that everybody should be in a state of yachad. Amr of Ovin, and Rav Ovin says another way of understanding the pasuk: Mishu yachad ba'olamai. Hashem, who is the unique one in the world, Kvar Havenes Kol Maaseim, has already understood everything they're doing even before they do it. As we learned before, the Gemara had brought up the question: doesn't Hashem know in advance? And the answer is Hashem judges a person the way he is right now, but nevertheless, Hayotze Yachad, Meloshin Yochid, Libam, Hashem already knows when he created them what Libam is going to be like, and Maven El Kol Maaseim, but Hashem judges them as they are right now. Okay. Then the Gemara goes on to talk about a point, which is also brought in the Bavli, that you can have a situation where Hashem is, where, for example, Rosh Hashanah, the people were Rishoyim. So Hashem decided that year there's going to be very little rainfall. Later on, during the year, they do tshuva. So instead of tearing up the Gzar Din and rewriting it that they'll have plentiful rain, instead Hashem makes sure that every drop of rain will go where it's supposed to. Not a bit of it will go to waste. And then the Gemara discusses you can have the other way around as well. So in this connection, the Gemara explains, Siv, you have the pasuk, Einei Hashem Elokecha Bo, the eyes of Hashem are on Eretz Yisrael, and via it, the rest of the world, Mereshis Hashana, from the beginning of the year, Mereshis Hashana Bad Achris Shana. So why the expression from the beginning to the end of the year? So you actually have in Tanya, in Egeres Yudalad, the Alter Rebbe points out that because every year there's a new Ur that comes Milamayla, so therefore it doesn't just say Lo'ilam Vard, because every year, Mereshis Hashana, there's a new thing. But Kahana Omar, Rav Kahana, now you have, there's a lot of Rav Kahanas in Shas. The particular Kahana that we're talking about over here is the one who was actually a Chavar of Rav, and therefore, just like we find, for example, Shmuel is often called Shmuel without his title, the same way Rav Kahana in the Yerushalmi is sometimes called Kahana without his title. Anyway, so Omar, so he points out, Meiroshis, the word in the Pasuk, Meiroshis, is missing the Aleph. So we can read it Meloshin Rosh as Meloshin Pur. So therefore, Van Achris Shana, so when it says, so therefore we can reread the Pasuk as if it's saying from the poverty of the year until the end of the year, where the word Achris, also besides meaning the end, also means like the future and the hope. Losses Lacham Achris Vesikra, for example, you have a Loshana Pasuk that Hashem says, I'm going to give you a future and a hope. So therefore it means Van Achris Shana, Mad Velot Leberosha, you can have a situation where Hashem made the year poor and miserable at the beginning, Meiroshis, Meloshin Rosh, and poor, the Yahav La'achris, Tofa B'Sefer, but Hashem gives it a good hope in the end, because again, we're talking about a situation, for example, where they weren't such tzaddikim, Rosh Hashanah, and then later on they do tshuva, and so that year that began poorly ends up becoming a very rich year. The Bavli also makes a point. You have the Loshon Kol Shana Shel Rosh B'Tchilas Mizacheres B'Soifah, that any year that's poor at the beginning will be rich at the end. And one meaning of it is when the people feel themselves poor and they realize that we depend completely on the Eibishter, so then such a year will have an Achris. So that's also something that we learn from this Meireshis spelt without the Aleph. Perak Ein Makirin, so the second Perak of Rosh Hashanah continues to deal with the dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh, the Edom coming to testify for Kiddush HaChodesh and based in cross-examining them, etc. So the Mishnah mentions one of the first things that would ask the Edom, Lifnei Achama or La'achar Achama, was the moon ahead of the sun or behind it? And both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi explain that the meaning of the question was, they were asking them, was the moon appears at the beginning of the month as a crescent, was the inside of the crescent, the concave side of the crescent, facing towards the sun? And if they say yeah, then we dismiss them right away because it doesn't work that way. The lit side of the moon always faces the lit side of the moon. Whenever we can see the moon, any of the lit part of the moon, it's always facing the sun. So the Gemara brings in that connection. The Bavli also brings over here the pasuk Oisa Shalom Bimraimav, that Hashem makes Shalom in the heights, in the sense that therefore Hashem made it that the moon's concave side, the moon's unlit side, never faces the sun, because that would humiliate it. In other words, the point is, if it weren't for that, the Eibishter could have arranged with various things to reflect one of, or one thing would reflect another, and it would come out that it would that it could face that way, but it doesn't. So now, what?
Isn't it that in the beginning of the month, one side of the moon is lit, and then it goes all the way, and then the other side is lit?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we always see from Earth, we always see only one side of the moon. So during at the beginning of the month, the lit side is completely facing away from us, and in the middle of the month, the lit side is completely facing us. Yeah, but right, in terms of the sun,
face the sun.
No, so the point is, in other words, that the lit side of the moon, whenever we see light from the moon, it's always reflected from the sun. So therefore, the lit side is always going to be facing the sun. When we see a crescent at the beginning of the month, what it is most of the lit side is facing away from us. And only a tiny little bit of it also is facing towards the sun and also facing towards us. But b'derech hateva, you would say that's just how it is when you have one thing reflecting from another. But the Gemara is explaining that it's more than that. The Eibishter arranged it that way because Oseh Shalom Bimraimav. So the Gemara brings in this connection. Tani Rav Shimon ben Yochai. But here is another example of Oseh Shalom Bimraimav. Lefisha Rakiya Shamayim. Consider that the heavens are made out of water. And the stars that are in the sky are made out of fire. And yet they live peacefully one with another. They don't harm one another, even though fire and water are natural antagonists. But the Eibishter makes them cooperate in the heavens. So that's another example of that Hashem makes peace in his heights between the fire and water that are there. In fact, Rashi points out, we had in last week's parasha, that one meaning of Shemayim is Eishumayim, that Hashem mixed together Eishumayim and created the heavens, and that's an example where the Eibishter has them blend together and work together. Another example, Amar Avin HaMalach Atzmei, Chetz Yemayim, Chetz Yeish. A Malach himself is made up of half fire, of half water and half fire. The Isbe Chomesh Gapin, and you should realize, by the way, that a Malach is described in a pasuk as having five different aspects. Daniel describes a Malach that appeared to him and told him various things of what's going to happen in future Jewish history. So Daniel describes him, Ugviyose Katarshish, his body was like Tarshish, where one meaning of Tarshish can mean a precious stone, like you have in the Choshen, Tarshish Shoyam V'yoshvei. It can also mean, actually, the word Tarshish sometimes means the ocean. When you have, for example, in Mafriyona, Vayimsa Onia Ba Tarshish, Tarshish can be a particular place where they went to, but it can also mean the ocean in general. So there's also an explanation, I think the Gemara says someplace, that means that the Malach's body is the size of the ocean. So in that sense, then also he can be compared to water. Ufonav Kamare Vora, his face was like the appearance of lightning, very fiery and majestic. The Einav Kilapide Esh, his eyes were like flaming torches. Uzraosav Magloisav Kein Nechoshes Kolol, his arms and his legs were like polished copper. The Kirl Dvorav Kikil Homain, and the sound of his voice was like the sound of a huge number of people, a huge loud sound. And Daniel describes how frightened he was by the vision of this Malach. So we see that the Malach is described with these five kinds of adjectives, and the point is that we're saying that he resembles Tarshish, but he also has a fiery aspect in him, and also Eitz Yosef points out the Kol Homoin means also a sound of rushing water. So in other words, the Malach has a large component of him that's water, but also a large component of him that's fire, and yet we're saying the two parts coexist within him because the Eibishter made him that way and overrides the qualities of Mayim and Eish. Apichsidus, we have the idea. Mayim represents Chesed, Eish represents Gvura, and the Eidosh is Oysa Shalom between them in the sense that he's being Mashpia on them a higher level of all, of course, beyond Chesed, beyond Gvura, which is Koilo, both of them together. Okay. Perak Ra'uhu Beistin, so the beginning of the Perak continues talking about the Dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh, but then most of the rest of the Perak deals with the Dinim of Tkiyas Shofar. So in that connection, then the Gemara mentions that you have certain details as far as the so the Gemara actually goes into a bit of a digression over there, talking about the point that so we know besides that you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you also blow shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel. So that leads the Gemara into a bit of discussion about the mitzvah of shiluach avodim, the mitzvah of sending the avodim knanim and sending an eved ivri, not avodim knanim, an eved ivri and an omer ivri, a free after six years or after yovel, whichever comes first. And the Gemara mentions in that connection that mitzvah was given to the Jewish people even before they left Mitzrayim. When it says Vayitzavim or Bnei Yisrael, the beginning of Parshas Vayera, it means that the Eibishter told them the mitzvah of Shiluach Avodim, and hundreds of years later, Yirmiyah tells all the people, it's in that Torah, Parshas Mishpatim, that they're not keeping the mitzvah, and they're keeping them beyond the 6 years, and therefore Yirmiyah threatens them, the Golos and the Churban are going to come because of that. So the Gemara explains that you need a whole Gzeira Shava and you need a whole Limud over there to learn that this was the mitzvah that was given to them even before they left Mitzrayim, and that this was the mitzvah because of failure to keep it brought about the Churban. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions the example that many times, as we know, you have to learn something in Torah from something else. The Divrei Torah, Niyam B'Makam Echad, V'Ashir B'Makam Echad. So Toni B'Shem Reb Nechemya, you learn in a Braisa in the name of Reb Nechemya, just that. When the Pasuk says in Esh Hischayel, where one of the meanings of all of the praises that we say in Esh Hischayel, one of the things it's all a mashal for the Torah. So Hoisa Karnia Socher, she's like ships that do business. I mean, Merchak Tavi Lachma, she brings her bread from far away. That means Dibre Torah, Niyam Memakarimam, Vashir Memakamacha. Many times you have things in Torah which is poor in one place. You don't have the details given in one place, but they're rich in someplace else. You go to someplace else in Torah, like going in a ship and having to go to a faraway country, and that's where you find the missing puzzle piece, so to speak. So the same way over here, to understand this whole point that this mitzvah was given to them in Mitzrayim, and that's the very same one which for failure to do that brought about the Churban, you have to put together many psukim from widely separated parts of Tanakh in order to put that all together. Okay. At the end of the parak, it talks about, you have the famous thing, the Mishnah is mentioning about the importance that you have to have kavana when you're listening to the shofar, im kivin libi yotzah, im lav lo yotzah. So then the Mishnah brings in the famous thing, we see how important kavana is, as we see, for example, during the war with Amalek. B'haya kasha yorim Moshe yodai, then the Jewish people would be stronger. So what is it? Not Moshe's hands don't win the battle, but it's that everybody would, when they're looking up at Moshe's hands, they would have kavana towards the Eibishter, and then they would win. And the same thing about Nachash and Nechoshes, the point is not the snake itself, the point is that they would look up and have kavana to the Eibishter. So that brings the Gemara into the point that so another point the Gemara makes is that when it says that Moshe lifted up his hands, also meant that he's showing them with that the importance of learning Torah. We find, in fact, where did Amalek attack them? In Refidim. And Rashi mentions, Sherofu Yudayim and Divrei Torah. Their hands were slackened from learning Torah. So now, on the contrary, Moshe lifting up his hands and keeping them aloft the whole time represents that they have to focus themselves more on Torah from now on. So in that connection, the Gemara brings, Amar of Yehuda, there's a pasuk where the Navi, Hoshea, says, Zonach Yisrael Toiv, the Jewish people have abandoned goodness, Oyev Yudafoi, the enemy is pursuing them. So what do we mean? If we just mean the goodness as like they don't have the gashmiyistic comforts anymore, first of all, Oyev Yudafoi have nothing to do with that directly, and second of all, it should be the other way around. Their enemies are pursuing them, therefore they've lost their Torah. So therefore we understand, since it's in this order, it means the other way around. Ve'en Torah v'la Torah. The word Torah over here means Torah ha'udachtiv ki lekach Torah, as it says, I've given you a good teaching of Torah. So because zonach, because they abandoned the good of Torah, therefore Oyev Yudafoi, therefore when it says an enemy will pursue them, specifically which enemies? The Esav. Dichtiv, as we find a pasuk where Yechezkel describes them by the name Oyev, Ya'an Omer Ha'Oyev Aleichem Ha'och V'Gomer, because the enemy has said Horei about you, and he thinks that Eretz Yisrael is desolate and I can take it over, which is a whole nevuah of the Edom, that they think they can take over Eretz Yisrael now that the Jewish people are gone and Golos from it, and Hashem says you're going to be severely punished for that. So we see that they're called Oyev in the pasuk. So the same thing in the pasuk in Hosea, then it means that the Oyev, specifically Esav, is going to be able to chase them. Why? Because Zonach Yisrael Toiv. V'chen Yitzchok Omer. We find Yitzchok expressing the same thing. Akil Kil Yaakov. Akil Kil Yaakov Ayidai Midezav. Kil's mantra, Kil Yaakov Nomuch. As long as Yaakov's voice is low, and HaKosef points out in the Pasuk, the word HaKil is written without the Vav. So we can read it as if it said HaKal, which means that it's lightened, it's slapped off. The Kil, the voice, which should be strong, is now Kal, it's now light and weak. So as long as that voice is weak, Yidei Esav Shotis Bo, then the hands of Esav are able to have control over him. V'chol Zman Sheyaakov Mitzafzef B'Kolo, whereas as long as Yaakov is making noise with his voice and learning Torah. In fact, Eitz Yosef points out from Yafei Toyar that the word siftzuf, which suggests like chattering and twittering, like the way birds do, it means little children are learning Torah, and they're saying in their high pitched voices, they're saying words of Torah, and the world stands on Hevel Piyam Shaltinokas Rabbeis Rabban. So therefore, and particularly that's what means like Kol Yaakov. Why a Kol? What about Divrei Yaakov or whatever, the words of Torah? It means just there's the voice. All you have is the voice of the little children learning Torah. As long as you have that, then the hands of Esav have no power over him. The Medrash, in fact, mentions in that connection on that pasuk, Akil Kil Yaakov, that they once asked a famous Goyish philosopher of that time, the Goyim asked him, how can we overcome the Jews? And he says, if you go to their shuls and their batei medrash, as long as you hear the sound of Torah, then you better realize that, forget about it. Okay, Masechta Tainis Perek Rishon. So the first Perek of Tainis talks about the various dinim about saying Mashiv Ruach Amoda Geshem, and saying Talamotar, the various dinim of when you start, and the different dinim about it. So again, in a roundabout way, as the Gemara often does, it ends up talking about the following piece. The Gemara, in the course of the discussion, the Gemara brings up, you have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue whether you begin saying Mashiv Ruach Amoda Geshem, whether you start Maskirin Gurus Kisham at the beginning of Sukkot or the end. The Halacha, of course, is like Rabbi Yeshua, we start only at the end. Anyway, in that connection, the Gemara tries to relate it or to contrast it with a machloikus of theirs about what's needed for Mashiach to come. Is it Rabbi Eliezer holds, it's also in the Bavli and Sanhedrin, that only if the Jewish people do tshuva, only then nigolim, and if not chas v'shalom, then not. And Rabbi Yeshua says one way or the other, the Eivishter is going to force the issue, if necessary, ma'amid lahem melech kosher kahaman. So in a roundabout way, the Gemara gets to the following point. Chad ba'nash have a ichta v'lishne. There was a certain person who was stinning with his mouth, with his tongue, meaning he was saying Lashon Hara or Nivul Peh or whatever. One of the Meforshim on the Yerushalmi, Pnei Moshe, I think, also says another meaning of it may have been that he was stuttering and otherwise couldn't speak clearly, and Rabbi Yochanan explained to him, or Rabbi Chanina explained to him, as we're going to have in the Gemara over here, that this is all as a result of him speaking Lashon Hara, that therefore the Eibishter gave him a speech defect. So either it's directly speaking Lashon Hara, or it's that he has a speech defect which can be traced to Lashon Hara. Anyway, also a gabeder of Yechanan, and also a gabeder of Yechanan. So he came to Rabbi Yechanan to ask what to do. The shalchei gabeder of Chanina, so Rabbi Yechanan in turn referred him to Rabbi Chanina. Omalei, and Rabbi Chanina tells him, zil tohi bach, go back. Go have charota on what you did. Tohi would be like toya al rishonis, like regret what you did wrong. V'loi bo'raisa, and spend your time learning Torah. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, ma'upe loshen eitz chayim, a healing for the tongue is the tree of life, which is the Torah. So either, again, the guy had been speaking Lashon Hara, and now he wants to do tshuva on it. So the Chanina tells him it's a two-step process. First of all, do tshuva on it. And second of all, start using your tongue instead for Torah. According to the Pnei Moshe's explanation, the vote would be that the guy had a speech defect. So the Chanina tells him the reason for that speech defect is because you've been using your tongue for the wrong purposes. Therefore, now go have charata and go learn Torah, and that will heal, that will physically heal your tongue and your mouth. So then the Gemara goes on to talk about further about this matter of the Golos and the Gola. Omer of Chanina Breide Rabahu B'Sifre Sharameir Motsu Kosu. They found the following written in the Sefer of Rameir. Now, what does that mean? Different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. There's a few places in Midrashim where you have this expression that they found the Sifre Sharameir. So one explanation, it means that he wrote it in the margins of his Sefer Torah, because we're going to have, or in the margins of his book of Tanakh, because we're going to have different words over here, which is not the same as we have in the Masorah. So he's not obviously going to write it. He's not obviously going to write the words in Torah or the words in the Psukim and Nach differently than we have them. So one possibility is he wrote on the side and the margin. He wrote an alternate way of reading the word, which we can use for a drasha. A different explanation is he had a sefer where he would write private notes of his drashas and on Psukim b'chlal. And in Meir's times, you weren't allowed to write down Torah Shabbat Peh yet. But as the Rambam explained, the person was allowed to write for himself private notes to jog his memory. So then afterwards, the pashtus, after he passed away, they found records of some of these private notes of his. Anyway, so you have a posuk in Yeshaya that starts off Masa Duma. Masa is one of the names for Nevuah, and Duma in Poshet Pshat is the name of one of the sons of Yishmael, one of the nations descended from Yishmael, like you have at the end of Chayesar or Mishma V'Duma or Masa. But here, Reb Meir Darshan, that Duma over here actually refers to Rome, so he wrote over there, again, either in the side or in his collection of Darshas, Masa Roimi. That we Darshan the word Duma as instead of with a Dalet as if it was with a Resh, so therefore it's actually a Nevuah about Rome. Maybe it's related to Edom as well, but primarily he's saying that the Dalet from Duma can be interchanged for a Resh, and therefore Duma becomes Roima, which is Rome. Now, you have the Pasuk goes as follows. There's two Pesukim back to back over there in Yeshaya. So the Gemara is going to darshan them phrase by phrase. Masa Duma, let's talk about the simple meaning first. Masa Duma, the Nevuah about Duma, which again in Pashat Pshat is one of the sub-nations, one of the sub-tribes of Yishmael. Eli Kode Miseir, he calls to me from Seir. Shomer Mami Laila, watchman, what's of the night? Shomer Mami Leil, watchman, what's going on with the night? And the next passage continues. Omar Shomer, the watchman says, Osa Boiker, the morning is coming, the Gam Loila, and also the night. In Tivoyun Ba'oyu, if you'll diligently seek Shuvoi saw you, then come and return. That those are the two psukim back to back. So now the Gemara is going to darshan those psukim phrase by phrase. When it says Eli Koda mi Seir, he calls to me from Seir, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eli Koda mipnei Seir. Hashem is calling to me because of Seir. Now, there's several different explanations what that means. One is that it means that because Seir, which is Edom, in particular Rome, is so powerful, so therefore the Eibishter is calling to me because of my tsar, because of our tsaris under Edom, and because of the how rich and powerful Edom is, that therefore the Eibishter is calling to me, do tshuva and get out of that golos. Amr of Shimon Lakish, and Rish Lakish explains differently. He darshans the word Eli to me as if it was Kaili, my God. So Kaili, Kore Mipnei Seir. Hashem is calling to me because of Seir. Because we're having such tzaras from them, and because they're so powerful, Hashem is calling to me and asking me to do tshuva. Rather, Rabbi Yochanan, Eli Kodem of Neser, Amr of Shimon Lakish, Kaili, Me'echan Nizdavig Li, why is Hashem getting involved with me, to fight on my behalf? Me Seir, he's coming from Seir. Because as you have in the Pesukim in Yeshaya, where the Eibishter is metaphorically described, Mizabame Edom Chamutz Godem Mibatzra, that Hashem is described, so to speak, as a warrior coming with blood-stained clothes, and they ask him what's going on, and he's saying that I trampled and destroyed Seir and Edom. So therefore, the Shlokish understands our Pesuk, Eli Kodem Seir, in a similar vein, that Hashem is calling to me and saying, I'm fighting in Seir on your behalf. So Omer Reb Shurban Levi, Reb Shurban Levi continues in that vein. Im yom alecha adam eichan hu alekecha, if someone asks you, where is your God? Emer lo, v'krach ha-gadol sheberoimi. You can tell him he's in the great city of Rome. He's getting ready to punish and destroy them once and for all. Ma taima, Kaili Kodem Seir, because again, darshan in the word Eli, as if it was Kaili, my God is calling from Seir, and Hashem is saying it's time for the golus to be over. Hakosev also points out, it may also mean that because Rome was so rich and powerful and ruled the whole world and everything, it seemed people could imagine as though Hashem is literally there making them larger and bigger and stronger all the time. Now, the pasuk continues, Shomer Mami Laila, watchman, what's going to be with the night, means Omri Yisrael Yishaya. The Jewish people are asking the Navi, Rabbeinu Yishaya, Ma Yotzalonim Mitech HaLaila Azeh. What is going to come out for us out of this night of Golos? It can mean It can mean, when are we going to get out of the Golos? It can also mean, Yafei Mara points out, it can also mean, what are we gaining? What do we have to gain from being in Golos so long? The Eibishter could have found some other way to deal with our Averis without having to put us in, without having to put us through Golos. Omrulahem, so he answers them, I don't know myself. Wait until I ask Hashem. Kivinchin Shoal, he asks Hashem, Chazer Etzlam, and he returns to the Jewish people who are asking him. Omrulay, and again they tell him, Shomer Ma Mileil, watchman, what's of the night, which also means we can darshan the word Mileil as speaking, like Mi Mila Lavraham. It can also be darshan Miloshin Yilola, as crying out. What is the watchman, what is Hashem crying out about us being in Golos? So Ma Mileil, Shomer Ha'olamim, Hashem, who's the watchman of the entire world, what is he speaking, or what is he crying out about our Golos? Omalahan, so he answers them with the next pasuk. Omar Shoimer, the watchman, Hashem is saying, Osa Voiker, the morning is coming, the Gam Loila, Osa Voiker, the Gam Loila, but also the night. Omrulay, the Gam Loila, so they're saying also the night, you mean that after the Geula there's going to be another Golos? Omalahan, so Yeshaya explains to them, no, Loik Moshatim Svorim, no, it's not like you think that it means there's going to be a temporary Geula and there's yet going to be another Golos after that. Rather, it means at the same time there's going to be morning and light for the tzaddikim and night and darkness for the rishoyim at the time of the Gola Amidus Vashlema. There's going to be morning for those who are upright and honest, and night for those who are not. Omruloi Emas, so they ask him, when is this going to happen? Admosai, how long are we going to be in Golos? Omruloi, and he continues, he answers them with the continuation of the pasuk. Emas ta'atun boi, whenever you want, whenever you ask for it. As the pasuk says, intervoyun boyu. If you want to ask, if you want to daven, ba'al, like you have an Aramaic, ba'al mine, it means to ask and to demand and so forth. So if you demand and if you ask for it. Omruloi mima akiv. So they ask him in that case, what's holding it back? Yes, we want the Gula Amitis Vashlema right now. Omalahen, Shuva. He tells them what's missing. The missing factor is Shuva. Therefore, as the Pasuk finishes off, Shuva Esoyu. Do Shuva and come back. So you need all of those factors. In other words, he's telling them you have to want the Gula, but you also have to do Shuva. Seder Tanius Ketzad Perek Sheni, so the second perek of Masechta Tanis deals with the whole Seder of the famous fasts that they would do when they had a series of fasts because no rain is falling. They had three fasts, then another three, and then seven, and during the last group of seven, which were the most serious of all, they fasted them like Tisha B'Av or like Yom Kippur. Then they would bring out the Teva, which is the box with the Sifrei Torah, al-derech la'Aron Kodesh, out into the street, and they would daven there, and they had a whole ceremony involved. So the Gemara says, Ksiv, Yetzi Chosen Mechedre V'Chalom Mechoposa. The Navi Yoel describes in his times there was a tremendous famine and a plague of locusts. We learned about it in Bavli Tainis, about how at the end of it they had only a little grain left and they had that betochen and the Eibishter planted it. So Yoel is describing what kind of gathering for tshuva and tefillah you have to have. In fact, in some Minig Ashkenaz, they read it as part of the Haftarah for Shabbos tshuva, appropriately enough. Anyway, the pasuk says Yetzir Chosen Mechedre, the Chosen should go out of his chamber, the Chalom Mechaposa, and the Kala should come out of her chuppah, and they should join together with everybody else in fasting and davening to the Eibishter to take away the tzara. So the Gemara Tarshins, Yetzi Chosen Mechedre Za'orin, the pasuk that refers to the Chosen coming out of his room hints at that the Orin is brought out into the street. Normally it's kept inside the shul like a Chosen stays in private in his room. And here we're bringing it out, L'Rechoy V'Shalir, they're bringing it out in public into the city square. V'chavo Mechuposa, Zat Torah, and when it says the Kala should come out of their chuppah, of her chuppah, refers to the Torah, which is compared to a Kala. That also it's having to be, so to speak, schlepped out of its safe place, out of its hidden place, its place of honor in the shul, and brought out into the street. Gavra, another explanation. The Mishnah describes how the Nosi and the Abbasin would be over there and they would put ashes on their forehead, so the Chosin and the Kala refer respectively also to the Nosi and the Abbasin. So the Nasi can be compared to a Chosen, again, because he stays in his house and everybody comes to him. And the Av Beis Din is the one who teaches everybody Torah. And again, the Torah is compared to a Kala, so therefore he can also be compared to a Kala. So the Gemara mentions, Rav Chelbai, Amalei Rav Yehuda Nesia. Rav Chelbai one time told Rav Yehuda Nesia, this is one of the descendants of Rav Yehuda HaNasi. There were several generations of Nesiim after Rav Yehuda HaNasi. They alternated back and forth in names, it seems, between Gamliel and Yehuda. So there was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's grandson, the first Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and then there were several other Rabbi Yehuda Nesias after him, so which one this was, we're not sure. Anyway, he says, Puk Iman, come out with us to the street when we're having the tefillahs for rain, the tsarach over, and your tsar that you're feeling bad for the tzibur that was suffering from the drought will go away because your zchus will help that Hashem will accept our tefillahs. The different girsayers also, but there's different other girsayers. It's tsar run ovar, that our tsar will go away. Or also there's a girsay, instead of ovar, there's a girsay ovad, with a dalid, meaning that your tsar will accomplish something. Your tsar, that you join us in the street, davening and with the ashes on your head and so forth, that tsar will induce the Eibush to have rachmanas on us so that it'll go away. Omer of Yosef, Hado Omer, so you see from that, since we see that the Nasi is essential to a fast for rain, so you see, even Tani Yosef, Da Anan Avdin, we see therefore that the fasts that we make where we don't have the Nasi with us, less Inun Tanian, then they're not really considered fasts and they're not necessarily going to have the effect. Lama, the less Nasi Iman, because the Nasi is not with us. So it could mean that Rabbi Yosef lived in a time when the Nasi, for whatever reason, wasn't participating in this. It could also mean that maybe Rabbi Yosef, for a period of time, may have been in Bavel, where they don't have a Nasi B'chlal. In fact, the Bavli mentions the point, Ein Tainis Tzibur B'Bavel, this whole concept of having a Tainis Tzibur like this, where it starts from the night before and so forth, there's no such thing in Bavel, because there's no Nasi, and there's no nothing, with the exception of Tisha B'Av.
Wasn't
there no in Bavel there was a Reish Galusa instead. So the Reish Galusa had greater political powers than the Nasi. In fact, the Gemara in one place mentions that the Nasi is the Shevet. He's like the staff who can actually have the power to beat people and force them, whereas the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael is the Mechoikik. He's the one who teaches Torah. Nevertheless, though, in terms of what we're talking about over here, it's the Nasi who has this ability to declare a Tainis Tzibur, and the Reish Galusa does not, at least of not that of that caliber. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, to show how important it is when the Jewish people are when the Nasi is involved and when you have some that tsar of the Jewish people, Kosev Echad Omas Pnei Aparoiches, V'Kosev Echad Omas Pnei Aparoiches HaKodesh. So you have like this. In Parshas Vayikra, it describes first the case where the Kohen Mashuach, the Kohen who's been anointed with Shemana Mishra, does certain kinds of Averis, and then he has to bring the power of Kohen Mashiach. He has to bring a special bull as a korban, which is brought as a korban chatas, but he brings the blood of it into the heichal and sprinkles it there, and then the bull is taken outside the machane and burnt. This will be mentioned in morning davening, parim and israfim, or seirim and israfim. This is one of those parim. Then you have, and the pasuk mentions that he sprinkles the blood as pnei poroches hakodesh. Then if the next section talks about when the tzibur, when the Sanhedrin has passed him something wrongly, and most of the tzibur has followed it, and you have the parhelim davashot tzibur, where also you have the same kind of procedure. That's also one of the parim and israfim, but there the pasuk uses the expression as pnei haporoches, without mentioning hakodesh. So what's the difference? Rav Acha Omar is spalgun Rav Abohu v'Rabbanon. Rav Abohu and the Rabbanon disagree. Why the difference? One of them says, and Rashi mentions according to this on the pasuk, when the Nasi only has done something wrong, fine. The greatness of the Beis Hamikdash and the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash is still there, so it can still be called Poreches HaKodesh. Chota HaTzibur, but once the whole Tzibur has acted badly, Ein Agdula B'mekoyma, then the Gdula is no longer there, and therefore, so to speak, the Poreches gets downgraded, and it's not HaKodesh anymore. That's one explanation. The Choron Omar, the other one between Rabbi Abohu and the Chachamim says, Lafisha Chotu Hamalamid Alomid VaHamalamid. The reason why, in particular, why we're saying as Pnei HaParoiches, as though, so to speak, the Paroiches itself is being taken out of the Heichel, is Lafisha Chotu Alomid VaHamalamid. In the case of the Parhelim Davashot Tzibur, those who are supposed to be learning Torah to the Tzibur and those who are supposed to be teaching it to them, the Sanhedrin, have both acted wrongly. Lafisha Yetzel Achutz. Therefore, they have to go outside the Yisparisim and they have to, it has to get publicized what they did wrong. Al Shem, Behotzias Aporah, Mechutz HaMachne, as we find that the Pyre has to be taken out of the Machne and burned. Akosev and Eitz Yosef and the Mephoshim and Yaakov deal with various nuances of the actual, the correct Gersa in the Gemara over here, because with both of them, the Pyre is taken out and burned, so there's not really a difference between one and the other. It's not a difference in the Psukim where one says Akodesh and one not. So one explanation is just that, because it doesn't say HaKodesh, and the other one, not so much that because you take out the Pyre and burn it, but the fact that it doesn't say Pnei Parochus HaKodesh makes it sound as though the Parochus itself is being taken out of the Kodesh and brought outside. Why? Because since everybody has done wrong, so it's almost as like, as almost as if it's lost its state of Kedusha. Tony Chizkiah, Remez, we also have a Remez in there. Kol Mokom Sheyesh Mashiach, Yesh Oren. The fact that the Torah puts together a Pnei Parochus HaKodesh, where Kodesh also means the Oren with the Luchas in it, and it mentions that in connection with the Kohen Mashiach, so we have a hint there. Whenever there's a Kohen Mashiach, whenever they had the Shemen HaMishcha, then the Oren was there. Kol Mokom Sheyin Mashiach, Ein Oren. When there's no more Kohen Mashiach, then there's no more Oren, because as we learned previously in Shkolim, and in Yerushalmi Shkolim, and in Bavli Yuma, when the Oren was hidden away, the Shemen HaMishcha was hidden away with it as well, and from then on the Kohen and Golem weren't anointed with Shemen HaMishcha anymore. So the two things go together. That's another reason why the Pasuk mentions a Pnei Parochus HaKodesh Davka in connection with the Kohen Mashiach. All right. Before we digressed in the last couple of weeks to talk about in Yonah Diyoma, we were in the middle of talking about dinim of fires on Shabbos, Rahman al-Islam, what you're allowed to save and what you're not allowed to save. So far we learned that the Chachamim put certain restrictions on what you're allowed to take out on Shabbos because they were concerned that otherwise a person is going to be in such a panic, he may forget that it's Shabbos altogether and put out the fire. So like this one, he can only take out certain things and that'll help him remember that it's Shabbos. So now you have the houses nearby where there's no fire, but they're afraid the fire may spread to them. They're allowed to save anything they want. Yesh Omim, in fact, that they would even be allowed to save things that are mukta, for example, money or things like that. Yesh Omim, that you would be able to save them by putting on them, for example, food and carry them together. Usually you don't have a heter to carry mukta like that, but in this case, maybe the Chacham allowed it. Yesh Omim, that even the whole issue of mukta is nidcha. In such a case, as long as you don't carry it someplace where you're not allowed to carry b'chal, because that would be an issur Torah, the Alter Rebbe seems to say as much. Be that as it may, the Eivishter should help that we don't have to know any of these dinim in practice, and if it does, nochas reit avert min reich.